Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter at @_ringsiderant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. And introducing your host, he is Cincinnati's favorite son, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, he is the man with the magical voice, RJ. And as always, welcome to Ranters Nation.
Welcome back to the Ringside Rant. I am the man with the magical voice. He is the man from the hills of West Virginia, JD, Justin Davis. Justin, what's up, man?
Just celebrating another Bengals victory, as usual here on Mondays.
Well, I
kicking
went back
some rat bird ass yesterday, just all over the field. My boy Joey Burrow setting records, the fourth most passing yards in NFL history. How about that, RJ? What? I saw your Bills won. That's,
yeah, you know, I ended
it's
up.
Not often our teams both win on the same.
No, and that hardly rarely happens. But I went back and forth, as you know, with Mr. One Anthony Pyrus, and he privately messaged me. He's like, "Are you? I'm just kidding. I'm just fucking with you." I said, "Dude, don't worry about it. When I don't say something, then I'm pissed." You know.
Yeah.
So, but that giggle in the background, you might recognize it, and you may not. She is the Four Horsemen's favorite fan. Miss Amy Vaughn. Amy, thanks for coming to the
Hello.
Show.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Winner of our contest, Amy Vaughn. Congratulations.
Thank you. My brother
texted me today and he was a little pissed that he didn't win. He told me to tell RJ that if he was on the show, I wouldn't have had to. He would have already known what JD2040 meant in my email from last week's show.
Well, yeah, he's known you a little bit longer than I have.
That's yeah, right. But I'm glad. I just saw him this weekend for Christmas. I haven't seen Amy, so I'd rather have her on here anyways.
Well, there you go.
That's right. Thank you. And I would just say to all the other ones that tried, sorry. No, got to be faster.
No, but next, starting in the first of the year, which this is going to be the last show of 2021. Stay tuned because we're going to have, if you haven't already found out on Twitter @_ringsiderant, that we are going to be doing a new contest for next year or for next month, excuse me. And you basically have to listen for all the, what do you say?
The deets.
The deets. Yeah, that too. Jesus Christ. See what I have to deal with, Amy? But no, stay tuned to that. That'll come out. That'll start the first episode of 2022. But we'll get to the first episode at the end of the show. But the Starrcade, we've been building up to this with all the nitros that we've been ranting about for the last couple of weeks. Starrcade, man, it has probably one of the biggest buildups. And we've talked about it, Justin, is, you know, you're building up to Sting. You're building up to Hogan. We'll get to it later on, but a lot of those smart fans really didn't dig it for whatever reason.
I don't know that I'm a smart fan, but I didn't dig it either, especially the finish of this pay-per-view.
Well, you got Brett, you got your boy Bret Hart on the show, so that's all that matters.
That is true.
But
that automatically makes it a better pay-per-view than the month before.
Well, clearly. But another guy that has performed each and every pay-per-view for Limitless Wrestling is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him right now.
It's the opening contest.
So, Justin, we are at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., December 28th, 1997. What were you doing in December of 1997, Justin?
Playing some seventh grade basketball, I think. and going over to my buddy's house with all my other friends, as we did every month, to watch the pay-per-view. We basically had our own Nitro parties, or at least pay-per-view parties for each one. My buddy's dad was a lawyer, so they had the money to pay. Well, usually we would all chip in money too and help pay for it. But I'm sure I was watching this at his house. I don't have any specific memories about it. But I just, the only thing I can remember about this pay-per-view is just how big the Sting Hogan build was.
Yeah. So we're before 17,500 fans, like I said, at the MCI Center in DC. This was the most profitable show in WCW history. Like I said, 17,500 fans, totaling a $543,000 gate and a 1.9 pay-per-view buy rate. So contrary to beliefs from one Eric Bischoff, even Tony proclaims this as the grandest night ever for WCW. So we can agree to disagree on that.
This was their crowning achievement in 1997, or at least it was supposed to be. I don't know that they executed it that well, but you know, there were some storylines in here that have been going and put together pretty well. I mean, we've been talking about the Malenko Guerrero kind of feud that's been going on up to this point. The DDP and Mr. Perfect match seemed to be, I don't know, that was weird how they just replaced Flair with DDP all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I know you wanted to get the title off of Kurt, but that felt forced a little bit.
Yeah.
For the most part, I mean, they had some good feuds going into it.
Well, and like I said before, it's just you get all this build, the biggest build in WCW history. We've talked about it in previous weeks, Justin, but we got, like I said, you got Tony out here talking about being the grandest event in WCW history.
Of course.
And rightfully so. Him and his, I'm sure he's still got that sports coat.
The biggest night in the history of this fucking great sport.
Right. But we're going to see Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Dusty Rhodes. So there's no mention of Bobby Heenan's absence here.
Dusty's in there, baby. Dusty in there giving a little commentating.
But see, did you like Dusty as a commentator?
Not really. I mean, sometimes he would make me laugh. What was it that he said there a few shows ago when we were covering? I forget how he worded it. He wobble legged him, baby.
But that's the thing. That comes back to the old Crockett days with him. And so it wasn't like it was, you know, uncommon for him to do that. But I just...
You always miss Bobby, that's for sure.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Amy.
No, I was just going to say kind of what you were talking about, how, you know, Bobby wasn't there and there really wasn't an explanation. There was a lot, again, as a person who maybe didn't follow WCW as closely, like I just felt like when I was watching the pay-per-view, I almost felt like there must have been a lot of stuff going on. Because first you had you've got totally new announcers. You got Dusty Rhodes sitting in, maybe for Bobby Heenan with no explanation, and Larry Zbyszko, which it makes sense why Larry wouldn't be out there. Then you have no Kevin Nash. Then you don't have Conan, and then you have Randy, you know, stepping in for him. Ric Flair is being replaced.
A lot of moving parts.
One of the ways, you know, as Jeff Jarrett just said on his podcast this week, you know, there's like three ways to kill a town. And one of those ways is not putting on the show what you book, what you promoted.
Right. Oh, but and I think you probably could get away with it if it was like a Nitro or a Thunder or one of these rinky dink pay-per-views, 97, 98, whatever, but it's Starrcade. How can you be like, okay, well, we're going to change this and change that. I get things happen, you know, we'll get into Kevin Nash was rushed to the hospital with a apparent heart attack, which it ended up coming back that he did, but that was their main reason for that. But it's like, okay, well, throw something in there against the Giant. I know you've been, you know, you've been building up the feud, but how he's Kevin Nash is basically going to be killing him anyway. So that power bomb soon. So.
Right. But yeah. I think if it had been just one change, you know, maybe like you said, obviously if that's what happened to Kevin Nash and you definitely have to do something different, but it was just kind of like, where's Bobby? Then there's no Conan. And then Randy said, you know, so it just seemed like
the finish to the main event was fucked.
The finish to the main event, and I'm assuming this wasn't, which we'll watch it in this video, because I rewound it twice, because, again, I never watched it. That piece of steel coming flying out of Eric's...
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that wasn't supposed to happen.
No. Yeah.
So it just was like, oh, my God, I think the top guys could have put something better together. You know, it's with some of the stuff that was going on to be the biggest. And I don't know. Like I said, I had to rewind that again because I could not believe what I was watching. Well,
I was sitting at the bar with Eric Bischoff at Top Guy Weekend shooting the shit. And he was talking about going to a big Super Bowl party at this bar that him and his wife used to go to for every Super Bowl. And whoever the team was in it lost or whatever. And he said, it just killed the room. I said, yeah, kind of like the finish to Starrcade 97. And he kind of laughed and he's like, hey, I know what you're doing there.
you're always that guy to create some controversy there, Justin. So, but we talked about it in the intros, this first match, anybody that's watched a WCW pay-per-view, you know, what's coming first. It's a cruiserweight match. But this is for the Cruiserweight Championship. You got the champion Eddie Guerrero taking on Dean Malenko. Arguably, I haven't really heard an argument against it, but of the best workers in ring ever.
Yeah.
Obviously, Dean being a coach at AEW, and obviously Eddie passing in 2005 there. But yeah, this had.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Amy.
Go ahead, Amy.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say. The only thing, and it's not necessarily that I have against this match, one of the things that I thought was very interesting is, again, you know, Tony Schiavone talked a lot about how it's the greatest moment in history and all this stuff and how a lot of it was WCW versus Nitro. You had the WCW wrestlers out in the audience watching to see what was going to happen. But then you have two WCW guys in the ring fighting against each other. So I thought... that was a little odd. Like I would have thought, now granted, I don't know who you would have put in those spots. Cause again, I'm not a expert on Nitro or NWO, but it seemed like a better build could have been to have almost the way they do Survivor Series where it's like one team wins. And I just thought it was really strange to want to say, we're going to have all these, WCW wrestlers out in the audience to cheer on, you know, because I want to see what's going to happen. But then
Six probably would have been in this spot.
Yeah, but he had his.
But he was not there.
Or his neck surgery or something.
Yeah.
Well, so Oh, but you said they always do a cruiserweight. You said.
Well, usually they lead off with it, but they've been building this up for, like I said, since we started this run here. But like I said, just two of the. Guys that knew each other in and out, guys that probably didn't really have to say, hey, what do you want to do? We'll just call it on the ring.
Yeah, they were both so crisp in this match, both guys at their absolute peak in 1997. I love Eddie in his black, red, and gold tights. I always thought those looked good on him. Eddie hits the frog splash, and his great music hits and starts off the pay-per-view. I thought it was a good solid starter. I mean, you can't go wrong with those two guys. And the match was what it was. It was fine.
Yeah. No, but like you said, just kind
of one of the small bright spots on the show.
Right. Well, and speaking of bright spot, Scott Hall's out next, taking the survey like he does every week, whether it be Nitro or a pay-per-view. But
and if you have a problem with it, RJ, you can go down there.
Go down where?
Exactly.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's what Scott Hall says. Now you can go down there.
Yeah. If you can take it up with Big Kev.
Then he does the big lurch giant thing.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was funny.
And then you get what's his face coming out to take him out or something later. But like we said, Nash isn't here as he went to the hospital with a mild heart attack. He's probably one of the few guys now that you look back at those times. He's in good shape. If you ever see him on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, God, he's in good shape.
The giant here?
No, Nash.
Oh, Nash.
Well, Nash. I mean, Nash currently.
Oh, yeah.
But more so in, that you brought up with Giant.
The Giant here. Looks like he's in really good shape here, too.
Yeah.
He comes out and squashes Scott Hall. Hall sells like a motherfucker when the Giant comes out and powerbombs him or whatever he does.
But that's the thing. You have to. When you got somebody that big, you got to sell for him, more than you actually normally do.
Right. So Kevin Nash legit had a heart attack. I mean, I didn't know. In the research I did,
it was said that his wife took him. This was the 28th. Took him Christmas Day or the day after Christmas to the hospital.
Okay.
And then it came back. They did the whole EKGs and all that jazz, the test, and he did end up having a mild heart attack, which at this time, it's not uncommon. But one thing that is very common is you get the NWO next with being Scott Hall, Vincent, Randy Savage on one side, taking on the Steiner brothers and Ray Traylor. Holy crap. This, like you said, Amy, this is kind of one of those things where we're just thrown together. You get the B team from the NWO. And obviously Conan was originally the third member here, but Savage makes it be the NWO.
Do we know why?
And that kind of surprises me that they didn't have a thing set up for Savage going into Starrcade anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Like there wasn't, a match for the fucking Macho Man on Starrcade. Like what the hell? Now you're going to throw him into a tag team match with fucking Virgil. Macho Man is a god of wrestling and they're treating him like trash.
Well, but that's the thing. If you look at this time, Amy, I know you mentioned to me in the DMs is like, you got Randy Savage, dusting off, putting aside all the fluorescent colors of his gear and actually becoming part of the NWO and getting all the black and white and all that stuff. And I always liked Randy in this role. He was, this 97 was, remember, keep that in mind where we went over it, Justin, is Savage and DDP were going head to head pretty good for the majority part of 97. I love Ray Traylor. Don't get me wrong. I was a huge Big Boss Man fan when I was growing up, but this is at that kind of downturn. And it's like, you could have very easily made it Norton and Savage versus Steiner Brothers. Very easily.
Did they say why Conan wasn't there or what happened? Or did they
No, I think a lot of these movements, they really didn't specify, at least on the show anyways.
Right.
What happened. But if you, like I said, you go back to these dirt sheets or whatever, and they'll obviously have their own interpretation over that. Unfortunately, anybody does.
Sure.
But, like Justin said, Randy Savage is a god, and he goes over. He gets that macho elbow for the win at 11 minutes.
The Steiners did something I don't think I've ever seen in a match.
Put somebody over.
Maybe I have. I don't remember it. But they did a DDT off the top rope. I don't think I've ever. I know they did the Bulldog. That was their finisher move. But
they had the Doomsday device too.
Right off the top, which is risky, I would think. But they pulled it off well.
Yeah.
I like the Steiners in all white here. Good baby face collar. Scott is absolutely fucking gigantic. But Macho just floats through the air with that elbow. at the end of this match. It looks wonderful. Good. Mm-hmm. Good. I actually like the match more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
Rewatching it again.
And
I'm like you. I like watching Randy Savage. I mean, you know,
you can never go wrong
with that.
And the Steiners. The Steiners get their definitely. Man.
I will say, if you want to watch a legitimately fantastic match, you go back to, I can't remember when in the 80s, it was Savage and Steamboat at the Boston Garden for the IC title. I want to say it was probably 87, 86. But that was actually on his DVD that it came out with. But yeah, it's just, you can't go wrong with a Savage match, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I always like seeing Miss Elizabeth and her sassy side.
That's putting it mildly for that. But then we're going to see, you know, Gene Okerlund coming out, another legend in the business, coming out with
selling his bullshit.
Yeah.
He tells us there's new faces in the NWO and you need to call 1-900-909-9900. And brings up,
what are the odds that if you call that number, it goes to Tony Schiavone's house?
Well, if he can make a dollar off of it, I'm sure it would. He brings in JJ, of course, and he tells us that who the ref for the main event is. And, of course, it's Nick former Patrick. Heel referee Nick Patrick, which makes everyone think.
Okay, it's going to be some chicanery.
And there was supposed to be, but he never got to it.
Well, it never got to that. That's the thing. And like I said, and it's just, this could have been, obviously we'll get to that when we see it, but it just could have been so much better. And I will, this is the one mountain that I would die. I will die on is saying that Starrcade is legitimately the biggest buildup pay-per-view ever. And you know, Eric's has said, okay, Halloween Havoc, you get this, you get that. I get that as far as the business side of it. I get it. Where on the business side for this, you're coming off of Christmas, you know, you're 3 days after Christmas here. Okay, not everybody's going to have the money or whatever to go to this pay-per-view, but you can get those kids those wrestling tickets that they want and all that stuff. But like I said, that's me.
I think Starrcade has more nostalgia. Like, I don't think of Halloween Havoc as any – I mean, that's like not a champions, you know? Like, I don't really see it as being like the WrestleMania, like the big event.
Right.
But Starrcade, all you have to do is say Starrcade, and if you're a wrestling fan, you know, that prestigious goes back into the 80s. And, you know, so I'm not planning on dying on any hill for it, but
I do agree, RJ.
I do think that, you know, the buildup, I think you said it last week too. If that was really the case, then you would have had Sting Hogan at Halloween Havoc. It was just 2 months prior. So, I mean, you know, I think, like you said, that the Starrcade was the biggest event building up. That was the right, again, that's like a WrestleMania. That was the right time to have that collision, so to speak. And let me ask you, Justin,
sure.
how many times did you call that number?
1-900-90. Wait a minute. How does it go? 1-900-909-9900 here on the hotline today, ladies and gentlemen. Give us a call.
I know you 13-year-old boy sitting there watching that pay-per-view.
I probably did call the one for the November pay-per-view trying to figure out when Bret Hart was going to be there.
Screw Bret Hart. Who'd he ever beat?
RJ, did you call that number too? You're the same age.
No, I didn't. I tried once cheap. And then I got just like,
little RJ's the same as old RJ. He's too cheap.
Touche there. Touche. But the next match.
Gene ain't getting my fucking 99 cents.
A minute. So I don't want to spend too much time on this because this is pretty much a squash here. But
yes.
Goldberg versus Steve Mongo McMichael. Nothing more than a squash match here. They've been building up this whole month. But I will say, to really give Goldberg credits, like, holy crap, what a difference a year makes.
Yeah.
Going through that streak.
He's kind of acting as a heel here, which was kind of weird. But It's a Mongo match. I mean, what can you say about it? Mongo gets a sidewalk, a sidewalk slam in.
Either way.
Mongo lasted longer than most Goldberg opponents here. So I think in that regard, it kind of got Mongo over a little bit, even though he got kind of squashed. But Goldberg put through Mongo through a table, and the fans started cheering ECW.
Yeah, I hear that too. That was my next question. I'm like, you guys actually hear when you were watching the ECW chants?
Yeah.
Which that's kind of something that you really don't want to mention, obviously, on their broadcast. But two guys that are ECW originals, Perry Saturn and Chris Benoit are up next in a Ravens rules match. So Justin, like I said, we've been saying for week after week is Raven refuses to wrestle and makes somebody else do it, which gets him over as that heel. And I think we both agree that it's a good old school way of doing it.
Yeah. He says that he can wrestle when and where and who he wants to, and he's not going to wrestle tonight. So here comes Saturn out again with Benoit. They go outside and Kidman does a great shooting star press off the apron, not off the turnbuckle, off the apron, which I think would be pretty difficult given the fact that you don't have a long way to go to get your rotation in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was nice. You know, the flock wins and everyone comes in, Raven, everyone comes in and, you know, it is what it is. Gets Benoit some sympathy heat, I think. But it also shows that the flock is going to fight as a unit.
Yeah. Yeah. But so pretty much Raven rules, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, are basically it's a no DQ, anything goes, and a fall. Basically anything goes.
Mm-hmm. Benoit was kind of fighting all of them.
But he's like, he's been doing that for the last 4 weeks, though. He's fighting Hammer and then he's fighting Lodi.
Lodi. Did you guys hear the Van Hammer story on Eric's podcast
today, the latest one?
I don't know if it was this week's or last week's, but when he was at a Christmas party or something and he started talking shit, this is I think in 96, so
I think he did.
Yeah, he wasn't with WCW at the time, but he went to the party, whoever had it, and he started talking shit about the Lucha Libre wrestlers and the English wrestlers, Dave Taylor and Fit Finley or somebody. And I guess Steven Regal took offense to this and beat the holy shit out of Van Hammer right there in front of everybody.
Yeah, Regal's not one to mess with.
I love that story.
Oh, yeah. So there's not really much we can say about this next match. 16-minute match between Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell. Let that simmer in for a little bit. Yeah, let that simmer in for a little bit.
I think about 5 minutes was waiting on Buff to get the fuck in the ring.
Well, that too. God. And it's just like pose off, you know?
Yeah.
For what we said it time and time again, this whole pay-per-view has been the build, and then it doesn't produce anything.
And of all people, Buff gets in trouble, rolls out of the ring, calls for help. Of all people to call, he calls Virgil. Like, of all the people in the NWO, that's who you want to come Virgil. Fucking out.
Vincent.
Yeah.
Vincent.
I would have taken JJ at this point.
And
probably bore you to death, but
Norton hits Luger with something in his hand. Buff wins again. This is like the third win in a row that Buff got over Luger, which,
you know what though? I did love one of the things I thought was the funniest is the way Scott Norton like picked up the ref and like smacked him around, like, you know, wake up and then like left the ring.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty, I don't know, just that whole attitude, probably an NWO attitude maybe, but I just love that. Picked him up by his, you know, pants, smacked him around and woke him up and then, you know, left the ring. I thought that was great.
I have said this oftentimes that I think that Scott Norton was the low-key MVP of the NWO.
Oh, yeah, without question.
Definitely.
Because if you really want to see some good Scott Norton stuff, watch his stuff from New Japan. He, like, legitimately beat the crap out of guys. And you talking strong style? Holy crap.
Yeah.
He was the one on the that went to North Korea, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought so.
Yeah, he was the one. He was on the Dark Side of the Ring.
Yes.
And he doesn't look any different, really, than he did.
No, he's still in decent shape too. He's not, you know, he wasn't fat by any means in his career. He's always solid, but
yeah.
Maybe I got a question. I've been sitting around the house all day today watching old Datelines, and it seems like half of them start out in a small town in Kentucky. I'm like, what the hell is going on in Kentucky down there?
I don't know.
It's probably all that bourbon.
Exactly. We got farms. We know where to hide those bodies. No. We got woods. We got farms. We can take care of what we need.
If it's one thing that Justin and I have learned so far, and everybody else will soon learn, is you don't mess with Amy Vaughn, because she knows how to hide a body.
That's right.
And if you saw the size of her husband, you wouldn't want to mess around with him.
he is a big dude. He's a big linebacker from high school. So,
well, even Aaron. Aaron's a big boy, too. I don't want to mess with him. I don't care if he.
That's right.
How is he like? He's what, 11?
He's 12. He turned 12 on Christmas Eve.
12. Okay. Oh, yeah.
And
that's...
believe me, he very much is enjoying being a preteen now.
He's
got a phone for his birthday. So, yes. So,
which just means that the Life 360 will be on at all times, and now his mom can trace him.
Find my phone.
As a high school teacher, I hear such horrible things from kids about that Life 360. They're like, I can't even go on the shitter. My mom turns, if I turn off that Life 360.
You know what my daughter would do? She would just leave her phone at home. Go out with her friends. She's a tricky one. No.
Well, crap, I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a phone until high school, senior year of high school.
Yeah, I got one when I was 16 because my mom, in case I got in a wreck or something, she wanted to be able to call her. Mm. Had one of those old Motorola ones.
Yeah, I did too.
Not even the flip. It didn't even flip.
The blue one was like just... the brick. It was like that thick.
Yeah.
It was even the Zach Morris one.
I could definitely say that my first phone was not in high school. I was definitely in college, being a little bit older than you boys. So.
Yeah. Amy had the bag phone in the car.
I had the bag. Exactly.
The little rotary phone.
I tell you what, my grandfather had a rotary phone, and we had a big ice storm come through here in 2009. And we were out of power for, you know, 2 weeks, and nobody could get through. But Papaw had his rotary phone. He could call out. Nobody else could. So sometimes oldies are goodies. So
sure. I remember that ice storm because I was walking to class in college and slipped on the ice, threw all my books up in the air, landed on my back while all my people around me stood there and watched me. It was very embarrassing.
Yeah, people.
That's not nice. That's terrible.
What's so next? Let me. We got Kurt Hennigan, DDP, right? Go ahead, Amy.
No, I was just going to say on those Datelines, it's always the wife, isn't it, or the husband? It's always the husband.
It always is.
Usually.
Yeah. You go after the wife first. But yeah, so
always the spouse.
We got DDP and Kurt Hennig for the WCW heavyweight or US heavyweight title. One of the low key most prestigious titles, I think. And like you said, Justin, you know, DDP is going in place of Flair here.
He comes out in a Hangman Page vest. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
I'm like, what is this?
Ready for some cowboy shit.
I like these two together in the ring. They just seem to fit right.
Well, they complement each other, you know, and they gel. I would say you go as far as saying they're very similar to like a Eddie and Dean, where they just know each other so well. They've worked with each other so well. And I find it interesting too. I'll bring this up because you brought it up, Amy, before. Is Kurt Hennig is one of those few people in the NWO that doesn't wear black and white. He wears his old school, whether it be the neon orange or blue or green or whatever singlets. But I personally think that it was just a matter of identity. When you think of Mr. Perf, you think of Kurt Hennig, you think of those singlets. Yeah. And a lot of things you can say the same thing about Savage too, but I think more so with Kurt Hennig.
Yeah, I agree. I think just the major change he would make would, he'd still have the orange or blue kind of in the back most of the time, and mm-hmm. in the front would be black.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, he had some sort of black, yeah.
Whereas, but he didn't even like wear an NWO shirt coming out. Like, you know, like he, it almost.
Well, and that's funny you say that, because when the Diamond Cutter gets put on him, there's no NWO to save his ass. They're out there saving Buff. They're out there saving everybody else. But fuck Kurt Hennig. Just let him get pinned and lose the U.S. title.
They were definitely very inconsistent, because nobody came to help Scott Hall either.
Yeah.
But then we're going to, Buff is going to get Vince. You know, like you said, I don't know if that was, I'm not for sure why. I mean, I guess you don't want to have a run out every time, but you know, why would someone not come out and help Scott Hall, who's getting, you know, powerbombed or whatever by the Giant? You know, like you said,
well, just, you would think they'd want to protect the title that they have.
Well, no, and that's true.
And they, like, didn't, you said, seem interested.
Just kind of back and forth with who they're helping. I don't know. Sorry.
So I mean, we're gonna see DDP go over, and Christ, man, just DDP is over like Rover at this time. 97, 98, really getting that push that, you know, a lot of people say that he should have really gotten earlier on, but
crowd goes crazy when he wins.
Yeah. And then obviously, like we mentioned, that feud that he's going to have with Savage is just historical.
It's just fun to watch too, these old pay-per-views, to see how into the stuff these crowds are. Nobody's on their phone. Mm-hmm. Nobody's, you know, Snapchatting and all this shit. No one's recording it. They're just into the moment. So that's what I really like going back and watching these, just to see the excitement in the crowd, mm-hmm. while these matches are going on.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we're going to get to the, I say the semi-main event at this point, guys. It's Zbyszko and Bischoff, as well as Sting and Hogan. We're actually going to watch this. So if you want to boot up the old Peacock and
fire the cock up,
there you go. And go to the 2:23 timestamp. Basically, you're seeing Bret Hart walking out in all black, no pink. So,
what'd you say the timestamp was? I'm sorry.
2:23.
Okay.
All righty. Hold on. Let me get there. Okay, I'm there.
Yeah. You good, Amy?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So without further ado, push play in 3, 2, 1, play. So
here comes the Hitman.
This match is basically, if Bischoff wins, the NWO gets complete control of the Monday Nitro. If Zbyszko wins, he gets to face Scott Hall the next pay-per-view. You get some of the build up to this, and there's something to fight for, which I liked. And I like the fans, like Amy mentioned, you get the WCW guys in the seats, because there's a lot riding for this. This was kind of like that, the Monday Night War within the Monday Night War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like Bret coming out here in a black t-shirt, kind of making it even more like, is he with the NWO or not? Mm-hmm. And I like how this match gets set up as the match goes along. Obviously, we'll see it here and talk about it. But the beginning of the match, Bret is doing everything he can to kind of stop Zbyszko from beating the shit out of Eric, which gives the even more of that thought process of, well, he must be with the NWO. And obviously, right. That doesn't turn out to be a case. And they kind of schmoz it that way. But I like how they set this up. Yeah. And here comes Scott Hall,
the bad guy,
toothpicks all over the place. And
I like Eric's shoes. He's really building up this whole karate kickboxing thing. And I dig it. And coming out in leather jacket, you know, it was funny when I was showing pictures to my son and my wife from Top Guy Weekend, taking pictures with Eric. That's Eric. Oh, wow. He's gotten real old.
Get old. He just quit dyeing his hair.
Why would I? But that's after he left the WWE first time. He dyed it there.
It'd be interesting to know, like, if you were told you are going to be on national television half naked. Wonder how much exercise or what kind of regimen he put himself on.
I thought about that too. I thought about that maybe for a question on like the next Ask Eric Anything.
Can you
give us what your training regimen was going in? I'll guarantee this. I don't think it was like Rocky and Rocky IV in Russia when he's
right
picking up barn poles and shit. But
still, he's in fairly good shape here. He's not.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it's, and even Larry, we'll see him in a little bit. For being, I think we're saying
he's about the same age as, for about 3 years. Here,
yeah,
right?
but he's the same age as Hogan and Piper.
Yeah, so he looked like, good. I thought Larry Zbyszko looked good. Now let me ask you this: this is one of my first question I had. Why is he coming out here by himself? This is for Nitro, and Scott Hall is out there with Eric Bischoff. You're telling me there was nobody that could have come out with Larry Zbyszko?
Bobby Heenan.
Well,
you know, I just thought that was, again, I just was like.
But the thing is, I think you go back to the days of Larry Zbyszko in the AWA. You want to build him up, I think, as that force that is, he's the personification of WCW.
I want that coat.
Yeah.
Doesn't
Efren have that?
He does, but without the gold Z. It doesn't have the gold Z on there.
I think even one Jay-Z Flair has one as well.
I might have to send Efren a gold Z in the mail so he can put that on there.
There you go. But yeah, I just never.
I mean, I don't think Larry needs someone like to help him with the fight. But again, I don't know. I just felt like coming out, this is supposed to be for Nitro. Mm-hmm. But he's coming out there by himself.
I get what you're saying. I just think they're trying to build.
I think he's coming out by himself to put him over as a baby face. Like, yeah. I don't need anybody else.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah.
And speaking of baby faces, here's Bret Hart.
Here we go. Him and Larry getting into it to start off.
I wouldn't mind seeing a Bret Hart and Larry Zbyszko match either.
I don't think we ever did see one of those.
No.
Even back in the 80s and stuff.
But Larry Zbyszko beat Bruno Sammartino.
That's true. We all know it. Check those boots. You better check Eric's. Make sure that shit doesn't fly out as he's getting ready to kick somebody with it.
Oh, my God. That is the best ever.
Now, where do you guys stand? We're seeing the Starrcade 97 emblem here in the middle of the ring. Where did you guys feel on that? Because if you talk to any of the workers that have worked in a ring that has had some sort of decal in the middle, that's very slippery.
Hmm.
Oh yeah.
Compared to going on WC or Nitro, you wouldn't have it until later on. But is it just a matter of, you think, just promotions? Hey, we want to make sure you know what you're watching, kind of thing.
I like it. I mean, the Halloween Havoc one was in there. I think it's cool. It kind of gives each pay-per-view that its own kind of look and feel. I know Vince was not all about that over on the other side, but I kind of dug it. I always thought it was pretty cool. Now, as far as working on it and slipping and sliding, I can't obviously speak to any of that, but I think it's a pretty cool thing. It's a big, nice Starrcade logo right there in the middle of the ring. I like it.
Yeah, you got to go with the old school. I like the old school Starrcade, logo myself. But, you know, this match is going to go just over 11 minutes.
Eric gets one punch in and acts like he won the whole damn thing.
Yeah. And I just think that those, you told a good story in 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, another question we could always ask Eric is how much did Larry help you in this match?
Right.
Because you get the old, and I'm sure they've known each other since the AWA days when Eric was in AWA. So I just think that this is a long time coming, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I do like. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I think it's, you know, this is a good guy for Eric to work with if he's going to work with someone.
Yeah, because you can't really say too many people in the back, at least from WCW, that could really work with him and keep him safe because, you know, that's really what it's going to come down to is you don't really want to hurt the boss.
Yeah, you don't want to put him in there with like Van Hammer or some shit like that.
That's if he shows up.
Yeah.
I like how Larry uses wrestling moves. Like, you know, Eric's out here doing all his karate stuff, but like Larry puts on submission holds. And I like that. You know, I mean, he obviously could just get them down and pound on them, but it's almost like he's proving that point of, you know, the submission holds and that kind of stuff. So I like that part.
I can beat you. I can beat you any way I want, pretty much.
Exactly.
All right. So we're at 2 hours, 7 minutes, 47, 48, 49, 50. Larry's backing Eric down into the corner. It's Eric at this time. I don't think anybody beats him. You know,
his facials in this match is awesome. Just,
you know, and a lot of people like to compare him and Vince a lot with the whole Vince and Steve angle, which I don't think it doesn't do just do because it's two totally different things. You're comparing apples to orange. You got to pair apples to apples.
Yeah.
And like you said, Eric's facials.
He just got a little round kick there to the back of Zabisco's head. Brett trying. What number is this? Is this 4, 3? What is this? Uh-oh, now he pissed Larry off. Larry goes in like a bat out of hell. He's rubbing Eric's face on the mat, and now Brett's going to start the count on him, and this kind of starts to show what we were talking about earlier. Now Brett's going to pull Larry off, and they're going to get into a little argument here. So people are saying, oh, Brett's, you know, taking up for Eric, which is a good storyline. And uh-oh, now the sleeper. Brett doesn't let him even put it. That's a chokehold. You can't choke him. Which I don't know why you can't, because didn't they say you could pretty much do whatever you wanted in this thing?
Right.
Nope. Takedown.
Do you think the crowd is into this? Like, no. All I see are people sitting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, I don't think they know what they're seeing.
Yeah, they don't know what to think about it, I think. Yeah.
Because in 97, you're thinking, okay, WCW, you got guys like we saw in this show. You get Dean and Eddie high flying all over the place. You know, you get that hardcore match with Raven Rules with Benoit. So
he just laid Eric down on the mat. Did you see that? He gave him a body slam and literally just laid him down on there.
Now he's like the back, arching his back.
Now we got a standing figure four.
Into the ropes.
Thought, like I said, just looking at that crowd, it was just like a Japanese crowd. You know, it's just like they're sitting there polite. I'm just like, do they, you know, what? I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. They only get hyped up when Bret Hart does. I mean, it seems like Bret is really
when Bret does something.
Is who they're cheering, you know, when all that happens.
Well, now Eric goes to the outside of the ring here. Scott's going to help him up. They're going to talk about some shit over here. The fans, there's one guy standing up in a Superman shirt, and he just sat down. Now, Eric just funnily took a bump off the post right there.
Sort of.
Yeah. Now Brett, you know, get it in the ring.
Exactly.
And here you come. So you had Denim Dan over here in the all denim.
Oh, yeah. That was a classic look in 1997, the old Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah. Shout out Canadian Travis. But yeah, I think they were just basically having Hall out here just for something for him to do, because still build up that feud with him and Larry, which I think is brilliant because we'll see. Obviously,
they're gonna fight at the next pay per view, right?
Will be sold out.
Sold out.
Yeah, January 24th, 98.
That is also the pay per view wrestling debut of one Bret the Hitman Hart when he takes on the Nature Boy Ric Flair in a classic bout. Eric's still rolling around on the outside of the ring. He's selling. I'll give him that.
So Bret Hart, he doesn't wrestle anybody from the NWO.
It's so stupid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that so does sound stupid. I mean,
I don't know why they put him in a thing with Flair right out of the bat, but they did.
Right. Especially with all this, with him being the ref for this match and what he does in the next match. Like, right. It seems
you would
like
think
that
the NWO would want to fuck him up.
Oof.
Exactly.
Speaking of fucking him up, Eric, nice sidekick to the side of Larry's head. Eric's still selling.
This is just, I just love watching Eric wrestle. I think it's just hilarious.
Oh. Look at that vicious knee. Oh, another vicious knee.
But yeah, the weird thing I mean, how Brett and Flair got into that feud, I guess, Amy, was Flair kept saying, you know, tell me again about how you're the best yesterday and tomorrow and all that. And you're saying that I'm not, you know, and that's kind of how they get into their thing.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
All right. So now, Eric, getting some offense in, if you want to call it that.
What's those just, vicious kicks?
So now it looks like all is lost. And I think we're coming up on where the gimmick gets loaded into the shoe.
Yeah, because usually he gets it right there in the right the turnbuckle.
Does it really get loaded? I don't know if it really – it was.
I don't know if it was. It never really got in there.
It's a half a load. It's a half a load. That's I think that's what James Sorensen's dad had when he was put together. A half a load.
Oh.
Little Jimmy. Little Jimmy.
Little Jimmy. Leave my baby boy alone.
Oh, jeez. Well, we can count out one listener anyways.
Oh.
Nah, he's a good dude. Yeah, Zbyszko, just tell him, bring it. Let's go. Shaking off the cobwebs.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. Oh, I'll tell you, some of these shots are just, that was pretty close to the ding ding. I think he about ring the ding ding right there.
Yeah. Look at his back, though. You see his back?
I know. His back hit does have, Bischoff's got a big red.
Right on his kidney, his right kidney.
Like
there.
A circle there on his back. Yeah. The Hitman just calmly watching all this right now. And Bischoff.
That was great.
He takes a turnbuckle shot and somehow goes all the way through into the outside almost. Swinging neck breaker by Larry Zbyszko. Beautiful.
You don't see that anymore.
You don't really.
In 97. That was similar to what Honky Tonk, man. It was shake, rattle, and roll.
Yeah.
Obviously, Zbyszko did it a lot better, but okay, here we go.
Yeah. Scott's going to get up. Larry's going to punch him down. Now, Brett, Larry gets. Eric put in the old upside down on the turnbuckle. Now here comes Scott getting his gimmick out of his gimmick.
Yeah.
Now he tried to put it on the bottom and it wouldn't go in. So he had to put it on the top. I think that's where it all got screwed up.
It would make sense if you do like a super kick or something.
And there's it goes. The kick. And it
Larry sells it.
It obviously and it's flies out before it hits him.
Piece of. You know, it's not going to fit in that round top of the shoe. It just,
obviously, it wasn't really well planned out right there, but the finish.
Apparently. But really, my God, that's the greatest. Look, everybody's looking.
Larry just sells it bigger than hell, like he's knocked out. Brett's just standing there trying not to laugh at the whole fucking situation. No,
I gave up WWF for this. Jamoke?
Yeah, for this
exactly.
Shit.
Look at for all the company, security looking for it.
Company that's gonna fuck up the finishes. Oh, for their two main events.
And down goes Bischoff. Down goes Bischoff.
Brett knocks out Bischoff. Now Scott's gonna jump in here and start jumping around, do his thing, and now he's gonna sell a fucking atomic drop. Really funny right here. Here it is.
Oh my God, that's so great.
Scott's selling is amazing. Oh, now Brett's going to wrap him up in the sharpshooter.
This is the right way to do the sharpshooter, folks.
And why do you tap if you're not in the, like, I guess is that to show, like, it's so brutal? I'm not even in their match. I'm going to tap. No.
Yeah. I
never understood that.
Brett not letting him out either. Mm-mm. He's locked up in there. And now Zbyszko is choking Bischoff with a rope.
I think that's his belt.
That's his belt, yeah.
Yeah, just what a cluster. Like, Jesus. Makes you wonder what was supposed to happen.
Well, there's your winner, Larry Zbyszko. And we will not have NWO Nitro. We will have WCW Nitro. There's the Canadian flag one of the fans have hanging there.
Right. So happy Boxing Day to all our Canadian listeners.
Oh yeah, yesterday.
Yesterday.
Right? Where did we say this pay-per-view was at?
DC, MCI Center.
Oh, okay.
Which if you looked at when we started here, you looked at this whole just the crowd. It's just so huge.
Yep.
Brad surveying.
Yeah, Brett getting a big pop, Larry getting a big pop. There's Doug Dillinger. He's dressed up in a suit for this pay-per-view.
Hey, tell me the timestamp, please, sir.
217, 28, 29, 30, 31.
I think I'm a second or two ahead of you.
Yeah, we're just recapping the ending or the midway point here of the match for the suplex. And then we get...
I mean, you know, Eric did his job. I mean, for not being a wrestler, I thought he sold well in this match.
Oh, yeah.
Overall, he did well. It's just that whole the thing flying out of his shoe. And then they show it on replay, just in case you didn't know we fucked up the finish.
Yeah, right.
Here.
great producing, by the way.
Yeah.
And then the commentators even had to act like, oh, yeah, he hit him. Then it went flying or something. I mean, yeah. I guess what are you going to say, right? What are you going to say?
Not a whole lot, I guess.
Well, we'll see him in the next match when there isn't a fast count. When there was supposed to be, they didn't know what to say then either. They just sat there and didn't say shit. They're like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't say
so, it. I mean, I can't believe how do you fuck up the finish of not one of your main events, but both of them? Both these last two matches, they screw the finish up on.
Apparently pretty good with this.
But here we go. We're about ready now for the match we've all been waiting for. I'm sure Tony is saying right now that this is going to be the biggest match in the history of this great sport. And that is a big crowd as they're panning from the top here.
Because this is where the Caps play. I think Georgetown played here. Basketball.
The Washington Bullets, did they play there?
Probably. Or Wizards, whatever they are now.
All right, so now we're going to see something here you don't see a lot. We're going to see Hogan come out first as champion, which, you know, Michael Buffer now doing the announcing, which I think I would have done that same thing because people hadn't seen Sting wrestle in forever. So he's the guy that you're really there to see. So you would bring him out after Hogan, which I think, you know, like I said, is the correct thing to do here. But I'm surprised it worked for him, brother. I'm surprised Hogan didn't say, fuck it, I'll go out last. I'm the champion. But I guess since he was putting the kibosh on the fast count, then he'll be giving us something here.
Right. Which, shout out to Devin Dowling. He asked us later on if it was a fast count. And
No.
Yeah, it was very confusing. Like,
It was just a regular count. And how is Brett supposed to say, you know, I'm not going to let someone get screwed over again. No one got screwed. He lost.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's he's like clapping, like you fast counted. It just was very, very strange. Very strange.
Why Buffer's talking here. I'll get a couple of the other two questions from Devin. He wants to know, is Bischoff the worst wrestler of all time?
No.
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 Plain so that's shortened to the point, right?
I mean, great, but
well, yeah, but I've seen worse.
Paul Heyman, for instance.
Was it gobbledygooker?
Him and Jim Cornette's match was left a little bit to be desired.
Yeah. He also asked, is DDP underrated as an all-time performer?
I don't think so. I think he's rated about right properly. Where he should be. Yeah. I mean, he's not Eddie Guerrero.
We're right.
Yeah. So here comes Hogan strumming the belt.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can't get more iconic than that. I'm sure it's dubbed over. You don't get the real music.
And as Eric rightfully points out, Hogan should have won this because he was more tan than Sting. So.
Yeah.
That's how I pick people to go over. Who's the tannest? Which is why Sheamus, I guess, should never win a fucking match.
You mean Sheamus?
Sheamus.
Potato, potato.
Speaking of that, our friend Mark, what are you going to say, Amy? Go ahead.
That's exactly what I was going to say. No, go ahead. You tell the story.
Oh, the great Mark Nelson, or the lackluster Mark Nelson, as some may know him as. Apparently is at the Titans and 49ers game in Nashville this weekend or Thursday night, and runs into Sheamus in one of the gift stores there at the stadium. and gets a picture with him.
Of course he would.
I know. He does. He sees it, meets everybody. He met the Bella twins a couple weeks ago. It's just like
he ran into Brian Pillman Jr. at the gas station when we were in Jacksonville for the pay-per-view this spring.
Exactly. I remember that. That's crazy.
Now Hogan doing his classic Hogan posing, because Hogan must pose, pal.
So before Sting gets out here, let me filter in one more question from top guy Brad Stanton.
Brad!
Goldberg was not quite Goldberg yet. Do you think WCW knew what they had with him?
Yeah.
Not after watching this. No.
I mean, they were giving him the streak already, right? So, I mean, they...
Right.
I don't know if they talked about it a whole lot at this point. I think they did, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
I wonder if it's kind of like how with Undertaker's streak, it just was something that was organically happened. And then it was like, hey, did y'all know that, you know, he hasn't lost? And like, you know, and then it turned into something. So I wonder if it might have been something like that, too.
It could have been where they're just trying to get him over. So they give him squash matches. And then after six or seven of those, they're just like, well, let's run with this.
Let's run with that. Yeah. Can I say something? And this is, again, such a weird thing to focus on in watching this match. I do not like what Sting is wearing.
You don't like the crow sting?
Unitard, no. The unitard. I do not like that at all.
That's what Justin wears on the weekend.
Well, I mean,
Brett wore that type of thing, but I always thought his looked pretty good. I think she has a point here in a way. It does kind of look weird on Sting.
If he would have done a top and bottom, like, I'm fine with the front. Like, it just, when he's in the ring and you're seeing him from behind, it's a big onesie. It just is,
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
It's
like,
funny.
His is different than Brett's, because Brett's had straps and you could see his chest.
Well,
and
had,
stuff.
Had
yeah.
more
this
detail
one's completely
to it.
Covered
and
up.
More detail. You have the thigh pads here on his gear, but
yeah,
I just think this is something.
Maybe a top and bottom. I don't know. That's just me.
I'm going to lob this to Amy right now and talk
Sounds
about
like
wrestling.
My house on a Saturday night. There's usually a top and a bottom in there. Oh,
do you God. Do the light paint and everything?
Not in his face, though.
I don't know. I've seen him do some face paint.
No,
I've seen some face paint.
No, yeah.
I have done some Sting face paint in the past.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
not,
it was Halloween
not,
or
not
something.
Not Crow Sting. It was Surfer Sting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say that coming up, next time we do a WCW in this time frame, this is going to be one of my themes, man. This was a banger. It was short. It was simple. You know, it got him. It didn't get him over, but it got him elevated a little bit more, because when you heard it, you knew who it was.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a mysterious song for mysterious mm-hmm. Sting. The lights are off and flashing, and everyone's just looking at Sting. And
go ahead. I'm sorry.
It just kind of amazes me how they just screwed this match up so bad. You had everything right up until this moment right here. Everything was right. You know what I mean? The build up and everything was perfect up until the fucking bell rang.
Right. So Eric talks about they had to call an audible because Sting wasn't in shape. Is that what the problem was or what? I don't understand. I don't know. I'm just like.
That's what he says. But yeah. I don't know. Oh. I don't know how much of that I buy. Just like him saying that Halloween Havoc was bigger than Starrcade.
Right.
I mean, he can say that now. I don't know if there's how much truth there is. He says that Sting wasn't tan, that he was a little out of shape, which if you haven't been in the ring working for over a year.
That would do it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think they would notice that. It's not like he disappeared, you know, for a year. He was there. I don't know. I just thought that was such a weird, like, we had to call an audible because we didn't have what we thought we had. And I'm like, I think
Sting was going through some personal things too around this time. Mm-hmm. Maybe a divorce or something.
Say, look from behind. It's a big onesie. I just can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm all for wearing a onesie.
Well, at least he doesn't have the Ahmed Johnson thigh pads.
I always get pissed when the wrestlers are wearing the same collar.
But the thing is,
I know
it's
not the same complete, like, same. At least they're not in both just regular black tights.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I hate that. Like, whenever I watch like a Nitro and two guys will come out and they're wrestling each other and they both have on red tights, I'm like, you guys couldn't have talked at all before the, you came out here and tried to figure out so we don't look exactly alike.
Mm-hmm. Look at the crowd. They are doing nothing. They're dead. I'm just really shocked that, I mean.
Well, this is when I think this plays into it. They didn't know what they were watching. This is DC. Right. You know, WCW is a Southern promotion. Charlotte, Atlanta, you know, Carolinas, something like that. DC, I get because it's a major city, but yeah, they're not doing anything here.
Nick Patrick's mullet is doing something for me, though.
Would think, though, at least the people in the front row, unless they're families, are, you know, like they paid money, big money for those front row tickets. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I just would think this match, again, as much as they talked about, it is the match of all matches. I just feel like people are sitting on their hands. It's just kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Buddy of the show, Eddie Prather, wanted to know, do you believe the Hulkster used his creative control to mess up the ending of the main event?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he got to Nick Patrick before that. And I've heard an interview by Nick Patrick, a shoot interview, that I think he's talked about this. That, but I don't know. I think he probably got to Nick Patrick and said, just count normal.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for me, if I'm Patrick, I wouldn't do it because last time I would checked, Hogan ain't writing my fucking paychecks.
Right,
But Hogan could influence me having a job or not, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But then Don, it makes me wonder, what did Hulk think that was going to, if, like, yes, do the count normal, but then to make Brett look stupid? I mean, I don't know. What was the point of that?
That's a good question. I'm not sure either. Who knows? Wrestling was so weird back then as far as people really taking the shit a little too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And caring a little bit too much about how they lose on TV.
Right.
Just lose. It's fucking, everyone knows it's, you all figured this out before we started the match. No one cares. No one thinks, you know, it's just everyone was so concerned about their character at the time.
New listener, Dominic Mosley, wanted to know.
Hi, Dominic.
Do you think even if the main event went perfectly, that this would have saved WCW, or was the buildup that amazing that nothing would ever reach the heights it did?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think that even if the finish is perfect here, I don't know that anything's going to be able to live up to the build, but I also don't know if the finish is perfect here, if it really has anything to do with how 1998 goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I think it's more of a backstage problem, or, you know, so you hear, I mean, if it had gone perfectly, you still have Kevin Nash not there. You still have, like you said, jockeying position of where they are in the line, who's making what money. You know, Eric has talked, Mr. Bischoff. We're not that close, so I can't call Eric. he's talked about how the corporate, you know, of Turner industry, they didn't like wrestling and they didn't really, you know, so you have a lot of that going on. I mean,
I think the thing that really hurt him, Amy, is they didn't have Vince McMahon. They didn't have one guy where the buck stopped at. They had Hogan and his power back there, Kevin Nash, Eric, and even people above Eric, to where that whole setup, I think, is what brought WCW down. I think sometimes fans try to get into the minutia of, oh, if they only would have done the finish of Starrcade 97 better, that would have fucking saved it. No, I don't think so. You know, it's the power structure behind the scenes is what brought them down in the end.
And I think, you know, maybe that's the reason why we see AEW doing as well for a company that's as young, because really, you know, Tony Khan may have his you know, what are they called? The VPs or executive vice presidents or whatever, EVP, but he makes the final decision. And so, like you said, not having someone like where the buck stops, this is how we're going to do it. Because you're right. If you listen to Nick Patrick, Eric Bischoff, probably Hulk Hogan, maybe even Bret Hart, they all have a different story of what happened at the finish and what screwed things up. And so you have that communication. And Eric said that too, when I was listening to that on the ad-free shows, Patreon today, that, you know, communication at WCW at all levels was not the great, you know, could have been better and probably caused a lot of problems.
Yeah. You know, another thing I noticed too is, you know, you could have done a lot with, if you flip-flopped the referees for this match and for the Zbyszko and Eric match, put Bret Hart in the main event. Because, you know, you have, he's got the history with Hogan, so it's like, okay, why don't you play something up with that? Maybe that's your next move with him instead of putting up with Flair.
Do you think they ever talked about Sting coming out and beating Hogan in a minute? Like coming out just absolutely on fire, you know, stinger splash, count, and be done with it. Like, would that have been better? Like, would you have liked that better than what we're doing here? Like, with the buildup? Because you all followed that a lot more.
But I think if they would have had another match between the two of them, maybe do it that way.
Hogan would have never got squashed.
But Hogan would have worked for him, doesn't work for me, brother.
True.
You know, so
Sting
think
just hulked up, by the way. Hogan gave him a suplex and Sting just popped right back up.
Right.
But now, you know, Hogan gets, I'm sure, the ever terrible, excruciating pain of the back scratch, which Hogan loves to do.
The most painful move in wrestling history.
Exactly. Yeah.
That should have been his finish. Oh, no, it's the back scratch. This one's over.
Yeah, but you know, Tony would sell it, though.
Well, yeah, it's the greatest move in the history of this great sport.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, David Penzer just had to get the fuck up out of the way.
Oh, and he got the pipe.
Or Capetta or whoever that is over.
That's those bat that he brought out, I guess.
I like those Hogan boots, though. Airbrushed boots with the blue, like, smoke flames on them. It kind of looks pretty cool.
And definitely breaks up the black and white, because like you said, they do have to wear the same colors because of NWO being black and white and Sting having the black and white motif, that it does break it up a little bit.
Well, it's better than the tomato face that we would see later from Sting.
Well, that too.
You know, I was once, what were those things, RJ, when we were kids, that cartoon with the evil tomatoes or whatever. Remember that? I was one of those tomatoes for Halloween one year, and I had an actual tomato mask, tomato face.
I will have to Google that when we get done here, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm putting it in the Google machine right now.
Yeah. Oh, Hogan's saying it's over. As we're going to be coming up to the end, we're at 235.
Killer tomatoes. Killer Tomatoes. That was the name of the show.
What? It was a movie too, wasn't it?
It may have been. But yeah, I was a Killer Tomato. I was a Killer Tomato before Sting made it cool. I was.
You got it over.
Yeah. We always knew that Sting was seeing what Justin was doing.
Yeah, right. He saw my Halloween outfit and he's like, fuck, exactly. I want to do that.
He said, that's what I'm going to do. What's the timestamp? I'm sorry, my thing got messed up.
236, 36, 37, 38,
39, 40. Okay.
They're out on the floor. Patrick's counting on. Going to be coming up soon here to the end. Got another. Yeah.
We know that Hogan's not going to do a damn Broadway, that's for sure. Here we go. Hogan's going to give him the old nut. The ball soccer, whatever you call that, the atomic drop.
You're such a good seer of words, Justin.
I know. I mean, I'm about as good as Tony Schiavone at calling moves.
Or better.
Yeah. Now, Hogan just talking trash to Sting. Sting looks like he's all but done here. There's the big boot. Sting sells it really good. Hogan going to the crowd with the old ear hand of the ear shit. And now here we go. Here's the boot or the leg drop. And here's 1, 2, 3.
Nice count.
Doesn't look fast to me. Brett
no.
thinks it is.
And we got the camera right on him, so we can see that was not a fast count.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm Nick Patrick, I'd be pissed. Like, how is Bret Hart going to come in here and tell me how to do my fucking job? How many matches has he refereed compared to me?
Well, and then
there's the cell. I love Nick Patrick's cell. Oh, yeah. Taking the hit from Bret right there.
So now, again, this match, Bret Hart is now going to say, you know what? I don't like the way it ended.
Yeah.
I'm going to restart the match.
Who the fuck are you? You've been in this fucking company for like 2 weeks.
Exactly.
What sense is it, Meg? Yeah.
It makes no damn for the title. It's not even like you know, a little jobber match, like for the title. It just,
yep.
What the hell is going on?
Sting tried to give him another stinger splash, and Hogan just held onto the ropes like he wasn't going to go for it.
Here comes Vicious and Delicious.
Yep. I don't know why Brett's not helping, but he just watches. Sting gets rid of them. Now they go for the other stinger splash. There it is. Sting flying through the air. Hogan now goes down. And we're going to put the sharpshooter on, or the scorpion deathlock.
Now, see, I think with Brett restarting, I think this would have been a great match. Like, for when Brett restarted it, since he has the power to do that, the stinger splash, knocking all the NWO people out, putting them in the, you know, that would have been great. Of course, like you said,
he's tapping. He didn't tap. He said he quit.
He just shook his head. Yes. Yes. That rings the bell. The fans, I guess, are excited about it. They're like, what the fuck?
What did we just see?
Look at everybody coming out now.
Like I said, when Hogan pinned Sting, the announcers just went silent. They didn't know what the fuck to say because obviously it just looked like a regular count.
Yeah.
Sting wins here. Just, God, everyone's now coming out to celebrate with Sting. There's Luger, who just got his ass beat by Buff Bagwell. I would be in the back in shame if I was him.
Yeah, I would too.
There's even Barbarian out there. Even
that's what I'm saying.
The heels are coming out.
So, just so weird. I don't know.
There's a couple guys in that. I don't even know who the hell they are. Like, you see that African-American dude there on the right? I've never seen him wrestle a match in my life.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you? As the Who would say, who the fuck are you?
Oh, Rey Mysterio gets on someone's shoulders. It's just weird.
Oh, there's an American flag getting waved. I'm surprised Brett didn't go over there. Like, now that's bullshit. I know. Give me that Canadian flag. Uh-oh. Who is that?
Hacksaw.
Yeah.
Hacksaw. Greg Valentine is in the fucking ring.
Oh, the blue there? Yeah.
Yeah. Greg the Hammer. Fucking Rey Mysterio looks like someone's 4-year-old going to the zoo on his dad's shoulders. Dad, I can't see the monkeys. Here, I'll lift you fucking up here. Oh, now see, I was right. Brett does have the Canadian flag over there in the corner now.
It is just so funny.
It just doesn't.
This will be Sting's second run as world champion, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He really didn't get the belt a lot.
No. You know?
And for being WCW's guy, they apparently didn't think he was their guy enough to fucking put the title on him very often. Who the hell is that dude with that weird ring on his head?
I don't know.
What the hell? Who is he? My God, they just must have went in the back like any slapdick out back here that's still here, fucking run out there.
Oh my gosh, this is what I do when I listen to the podcast. I just laugh out loud at what things you say, Justin.
Craig Leathers, and now we get the credits. Craig Leathers, his name is the first one that fucking comes across there, of course.
Of course.
Oh Lordy.
So what I'm gonna do now is bring in Elijah. He did well last week. We brought him back this week. Come on, buddy. Gotta hit the button. Come here, bud.
right, this one.
Right. It's listener questions.
All right. So it is Justin's favorite person in the whole world is here for one question.
Money Mike.
It's Mr. Money himself. Money Mike.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
So he says, let's add a 6-man tag match to Starrcade 97. RJ.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that, Mike.
JD and Bret Hart versus FTR and Tully. Amy is the guest referee. Who wins? I think we all know what the answer to that is. It's clearly it's
number one. FTR and Tully would win because they are superior athletes. It would have nothing to do with any bias. I wouldn't even have to be biased. They would whoop ass.
Well, Dax loves Bret Hart so much that I think that he would take the finger poke of doom from Bret and lay right there on his back and let Bret pin him, and we'd win.
Works for me. Works for me. I'll stand in the corner.
Respectively, yeah. I agree. I disagree.
Well, thanks for that, Mike.
Thanks also, for that, Mike. The world, that was a question the world needed to know. You're always there with, you know, the pulse of the fans.
Jesus Christ.
We love you, Money Mike.
Anyways, first and foremost, Amy, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
I know you are not adding any songs to your music list.
Oh. It's like Festivus. She's here to air her fucking grievances.
I just wanted to see if I could take a few minutes, if we could just discuss some entries and just discuss. Is that okay?
Sure, that's fine.
I agree with you, Amy. Brett's music should be number one.
Oh, you're going to love me. I'm getting the list out because you sent that to me. So I appreciate it. I love you all doing this entry music list. This has been really fun. But I want to look at the top 10. And I want to see if you all would make some thoughts, some considerations. There are three. It is Bret Hart, and it is Dusty Rhodes, and it is Ric Flair. Those three, I think maybe we could look at and reevaluate their standings. And I'll give you some reasonings, and then you all, it's your list, so y'all do whatever you got to do, right?
All right, I'm here for it.
Okay. Right now, currently, 1, 2, 3, 4. I think Ric Flair and Bret Hart need to be switched. You know what, though? Let me tell you why, Justin. Because, number one, that Ric Flair's music is iconic for him. No one else could have that music. And he has used it from the 80s, the 90s, the zeros, he has used that music. That is Ric Flair. Now, the reason why I said consider switching their positions is because Bret's music is very iconic. And that is Bret. However, the WWE kind of screwed him a little bit on this because they had put his music with basically anybody that's Canadian. you all did the Survivor Series. I don't know, 97. I don't know which one you all did fairly recently. The Canadian team, who did not have Bret Hart on the team.
Doug Furness and Phil LaFarge.
Came out to Bret Hart's music. So that, to me, when I'm thinking about your entrance music, the ones that should be in the top five, do you think they would do that to Stone Cold? A group of guys from Texas could have Stone Cold's music? No.
All right. Here's my rebuttal against this.
I wasn't finished. No, just kidding. Go ahead.
This drudgery going on over there. Ric Flair's music is public domain music. It wasn't written for Ric Flair. It's a song that has been around for ages. That, to me, is why it dropped down the list.
But when you hear that music, do you think
original to him?
Yes, but when you hear that music, Ric Flair's music, do you think, oh, Space Odyssey?
Space Odyssey.
But I'm saying, but when you hear it, that's not what you think. That's the same thing with Randy Savage. Every yeah. graduation, I don't think graduation. That pomp and circumstance, that's Rick, or that's Randy Savage's music. So I do agree. It is a public domain. Yes, it was not written for him. However, he is synonymous with that song now. You do not think Space Odyssey. You think Ric Flair. So that's the reason why. And again, not saying that about Brett. WWE is the one who did that to him by giving his music to any Canadian. I don't, you know, that's kind of what made me say, okay, they need to be switched.
Well,
and I don't think Dusty needs to be in the top 10. And let me tell you why. Dusty's time. No. It's a great song. But Dusty's time, like, that is not synonymous with Dusty. Like, he did not have that music. Like, he was only in the WWF for, I don't know, a couple years. Like, it wasn't like... Again, that's not music that he has taken, like Ric Flair has taken from, you know, throughout his career. He did that in the WWF because he had to, or, you know, that. But you didn't see him try to, you know, that wasn't something that he wanted to be, you know, wanted to carry around with him, I guess you could say, or fought for. So I don't necessarily think, even though Dusty Rhodes obviously is an icon in the wrestling industry, that particular entrance song, I don't think it should be in the top 10. That's just me.
Okay.
And I definitely think, I know I didn't mention it, but I definitely think Goldust needs to be higher.
I'll make a compromise on this. I'm not moving Brett's music, but I can agree to flip Dusty and Rick on the list. RJ, what do you think about that?
I was just going to suggest that.
Okay. Now, I love Dusty's music. I think it is. I think the reason why it's ranked so high on our list is because it kind of puts us back in that 5 or 6 year old RJ Justin little slapdicks, because, you know, those 2 years that Dusty was in the WWE were two of our most, you know, formalizing years of watching wrestling as kids.
Definitely. No. And again,
I think that's why it is put up there higher.
Oh, yes. And I totally understand that. And again, I'm just looking at it as, while you were 4 and 5 year olds, I was a tad older. So I'm just looking at it as, that to me is not for the music entrance that you have. Again, Steve Austin's not going to have, he had other music, but he's not going to have any other music except for that.
Yeah.
You know, NWO, you know, how iconic that is to that group. I hear that music and I like it, but like when I think of Dusty, that's not one of the first things I think of, that great entrance song. I just think of, you know, him feuding with the Four Horsemen or different things like that. So that's all. And Goldust does deserve to be a tad bit higher, because that, again, if you go back to that music was written for him, that you could not give that music to anybody. Like, it had to be that Goldust character. It really does kind of go with the performance that he was giving. So that's all I have to say. Obviously, your list, and I'll let y'all know every week how I don't like it or what y'all haven't done right. But I just want to throw those points out to you as a different view.
Yeah.
This was a great time of year for Amy to come on and air her grievances, since it's just a couple days after Festivus for the rest of us. And so this worked out really good. But I think we can do the Dusty and Flair swap, because I do think that Flair is ranked probably a little low on the list for what his music is. Because like Amy said, it has been there the whole time, still is to this day with him. We can agree. We're leaving Brett's shit right where it is. I'll say that.
But
I will agree to disagree, but... I do appreciate you listening to my my thoughts and reconsidering that. So, see, that's how adults do it.
Yeah.
It's the season of giving around here on the ringside rant.
Well, we do thank you for coming on, Amy.
We really do appreciate you making the time for us. We love you're on our short list to have on because, well.
And we hope everyone is doing okay down there in Mayfield, Kentucky, of course.
It has been. Yes. I'll tell you what, though. You talk about seeing the meaning of Christmas, you know, like really seeing what the meaning of Christmas is. You have a tornado hit your town, destroy
it. Fucking December. Like, who the hell's even expecting a tornado in December?
Exactly. Anyway? Literally 2 weeks before Christmas. The amount of, I've been helping at a distribution center, and there are all kinds of ones set up because we have so much support from the entire country. Like, there, it's not unusual for a truck from Oklahoma or Massachusetts or wherever to be coming to us with everything, generators, food, clothing, you know, bleach, like diapers, you know, like we kind of talked about, you know, like if you have your house, if you have a fire and it, your house is gone, like your insurance, like everybody's just trying to take care of that one family. You know, here we literally had like over 300 houses in Mayfield have some kind of damage to it. So then now you have, you know, possibly 300 families that don't have a place to stay, don't have any clothes, don't have, you know, like everything they had was destroyed. So then, you know, you're trying to take care of a huge group. And then our electric company was hit. So then they don't have power. So, you know, but I can easily say that, like I said, the real meaning of Christmas has really come out. We have had groups. Samaritan's Purse has been here. All kinds of different groups from all over the country helping clean up, helping people get supplies they need, people driving supplies to people. And it has just been remarkable. And of course, it's going to take time. I mean, our downtown is gone. And so that's just a really sad thought. And again, all those houses, you know, those people are displaced. And whether they leave our community or, you know, rebuild, you know, you can't rebuild in 2 weeks. It's a long, long process. So, again, you all have you know, done shout outs. Another podcast, I don't know if I'm allowed to say their names, but FFP Podcast, they have been fabulous and put out a tweet. And again, Allison Faye donated a bunch of stuff for the animal shelter because we all know how much I love my animals. And other people have done so that many things. And it's just, like I said, incredible, absolutely incredible. But there is a lot of work. And so keep our town and area just in your prayers and in your thoughts. And we will definitely make it through. So thank you. Well, I didn't mean to go through all that. So.
No, you're good.
Oh, that's, you know, it's not every day something like that happens to you, especially to your hometown. So I know.
And we were so blessed. I have a sister and my mom and dad, and I have lots of family that lives around me. We were kind of more west, I guess, or east of the tornado. So we were like 3 or 4 miles from the tornado. So our house was fine. We did lose electricity, but like my mom and dad were fine. My dad's place of business, because he does consulting in an office, like he was able to go in and get his stuff. It wasn't completely, you know, destroyed downtown, but my aunt and uncle did lose their restaurant, so I mean that's probably the biggest closest to me anyway.
Are they planning on rebuilding and reopening, or,
you know, I don't know. I think at this moment I think they're just trying to live day by day. You know, they were in a historic building downtown, so again, I don't even have an idea of what that would look like rebuilding, you know, I mean, they also had like 30 employees who, as a wait staff, you really rely on tips and waiting on tables and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think they're really focused right now about just trying to make sure that their employees are taken care of. And it was a family business. So again, making sure that they were all taken care of. But the business did not have any, nobody was in there. They sent everybody home. So, which is a blessing. I saw
some crazy stuff about some of the factories there. People were told they couldn't leave.
Yeah,
think they're suing, and which I think rightly so. If you know, if someone told me I had to stay into a building while a tornado is getting ready to hit us, I think that's a little crazy. But
well, I know. I think the building that you're talking about is the candle factory. That was the hardest hit. That's where they had to dig out people, and people passed. I'm like you. I have no idea. Everybody, and I know because we kind of work in the same, at least industry, Justin, everybody has protocols of what you do when you have a tornado. You go to your safe spot, you go to your bathroom, whatever. And so, you know, I don't know with that type of tornado that came through. I mean, they, from my understanding, they were in the safe spot. They're in the bathroom, whatever, the employees that were there. But the tornado was a direct hit. Like, it, you know, I have no idea if they were told they couldn't go home. I've heard all kinds of stuff that there were some people that were home because, you know, originally they talked like there was 110 employees. That's not how many people were actually in the building. Some were right. At, you know, so I really don't know. All I do is I just pray for everybody involved. You know, I don't know what the truth is. And, I just pray for everybody involved. And yes, if there needs to be some kind of restitution, you know, some of those people lost their job where they work, plus their car outside.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe a damage to their house. Right. So, I mean, you know, some of those people just, it wasn't just, you know, one, you know, I lost my, I mean, you know, some people, their house is fine, but they have no place to work now. And so again, right before Christmas. And so like, I mean, like I said, it's been, and there's other little areas. Mayfield was probably one of the bigger areas, but Dawson Springs, you know, it was just Casey, lots of little areas were really damaged. And so the help that we've gotten from everyone has been phenomenal. And so I just, again, can't thank everybody enough.
Yeah. Amy, is there any places that people can donate that you'd like to tell people about here on the show?
There is a and I can give it to RJ if you want to put it, because it, you know, the name of it and stuff. There is a fund, and it is started by a gentleman that I know, and I would feel comfortable telling people, you know, to give to him. But it's basically a Mayfield Community Tornado Relief Fund, and I'll give that to you, RJ, if you yeah. want. And then that way
we can,
you know, obviously the Red Cross, United Way, you know, all of those are here. There's lots of GoFundMes out there. The animal shelter, the Grays County Mayfield Animal Shelter. I would love if anybody would go on to their wish list. You know, they took in like almost 70 animals that were displaced, that were injured, you know, during the storms and stuff. So they've been overloaded. So again,
and I'm sure it's a wide range of animals too.
Yes, exactly. So again, if you know, and they've been really great about trying to locate, you know, trying to help people find their animals and take care of animals that might have been injured. So the Grays County Mayfield Animal Shelter, they're on Facebook and all that good stuff. I would love if anybody wanted to do any kind of donation to them, they could really use it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you, Amy, for coming on. Obviously, it was a pleasure to have you on here, and our first kind of guest here to do the watch along on the pay-per-view with us. And we look forward to whoever that may be next month, RJ.
Yeah. So next,
I hope. No, sorry.
Oh no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I hope I did good, and that you aren't like, we're putting the kibosh on this. No more contests.
No.
If you head over to castbuy.com/ringsiderant, you'll get all our links to our networks are on, all the platforms we're on, our merchandise store. Everything is right there. So if you want to head over there next week, Justin, we are going to be ranting about the January 3rd, 2005 edition of Monday Night Raw. Excuse me. So that'll be a little bit newer since we're coming off of here with 97. We're going to go for a few couple, two, 3 years. So other than that, Justin, you got anything, man?
I don't think so. Go Bengals all, and go Bearcats this Friday as we play the Alabama Rolling Shit and hopefully just flush them right down the toilet.